And everybody will see it as a default. They'll say, oh, COMEX didn't have enough gold to pay off this month's contracts. Well, I want to be long the commodity where that's happening on a metals exchange, you know? I mean, people will just buy the hell out of it at that point, even more so than they are now. And I think silver is a bigger candidate for that, really, because it's such a tiny market.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Hey, we are just past the first week of May. Election madness is heating up, mortgage rates going up, stores closing doors like never before. And wow, where are we heading to next? John Rubino is with us now. Make sure you check out his Substack, rubino.substack.com. So, John, have we crossed the Rubicon yet, or is it a few more kilometers, as our friends to the north would say?
Hey, Carrie. Well, there are so many things pointing in the direction of, you know, a crack-up boom or something like that, where the people just lose faith in the currency. So, yeah, we could go on all day just about those signs that are out there. But one of the big ones, I think, is the Fed saying, okay, inflation is 3 to 6%, depending on what measure we're using. And our next move is not going to be a rate increase. We promise you that. You know, so we're going to hold rates steady, or we're going to cut them. But that's it. And, you know, with let's take the high end of the range. And if inflation is 6%, that's a massive crisis. You know, that destroys the savings of a whole generation in a very short time. And no Fed worth the name, you know, worth the name of central bank, would ever let something like that happen without tightening to bring inflation back down, ideally to zero, but at least to their made up 2% target. But apparently they're not doing that. And the reason for that is that the system can't handle higher interest rates. So what are they going to do? You know, you can't tighten monetary policy after you've already spent going on 50 years now, borrowing more and more money each year to the point where everybody is interest rate sensitive. So you you know, you raise interest rates, or even if you just keep interest rates the same as they are right now for very much longer, stuff starts blowing up. You know, mortgages, 7% and change right now, car loans, 10% plus. I think the commercial real estate thing, as you and I have talked about, is probably one of the big victims of that, which means the local and regional banks are one of the big victims of this whole thing. So that could be where it happens first, but any number of other catalysts are out there waiting to blow things up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think 2024 is going to be the year of the bank failure?
I think bank failures are part of the next 6 months for sure, just because, well, here's the mechanism. Commercial real estate, all those buildings that went up, especially office buildings over the past decade, were financed with relatively cheap money, and they had lots of people working in them. But now money is not cheap anymore, so those buildings have to be refinanced at higher interest rates. And after the pandemic, when people found out that it's nicer to work from home than it is to commute into a city to work in a big cubicle in a high rise, most office buildings have lower occupancy than they did. So they're getting hit with a double whammy. Their occupancy is down, which means their cash flow is lower. And the interest rates at which they have to refinance are much higher. So a lot of these buildings just aren't worth doing that. And so they're changing hands at big discounts. So a $200 million building is being sold for $110 million. And in some cases, they're being sold for like $2 million. And those losses have to be taken somewhere, right? And they're on the balance sheets of local and regional banks. So let your local bank report a big loss on its commercial real estate. You're going to pull your deposit out, you and all the other depositors. That will cause a bank run, which breaks the bank. And then that fear will spread to all the other local and regional banks, and you'll have a run on a sector. And the government will have to step in with several trillion dollars this time around of bailout money, which makes it look an awful lot like a pandemic, right? They're going to have to do something that's on a scale of the stimmy checks. And that led to a increase in the money supply of between 40 and 60%, depending on which measure that you use, which in turn led to an inflation rate officially of 8.75% in 2022, but was really something like 15%, which put a huge part of the country in very dire financial straits because they can't cover their inflating day-to-day expenses. So if we do that again, I think it'll just tear a hole in the social fabric, you know, and we'll be pre-World War II Europe or something like that, where there's just battles in the street because everybody's savings have been wiped out and there are all these ideologies explaining it and offering to take over in place of the existing government. That would happen. So it's not clear how the government gets out of making that happen by bailing out all these banks, because they're probably going to need that bailout.
Hey, maybe that explains why the world's central banks now hold 35% of the world's gold, whereas a decade ago they held 4%, John.
Well, and it's interesting which central banks, too, because it's not the U.S. buying gold, and it's not most of, it's not Western Europe. It's Eastern Europe, China, Russia, and India, and Turkey, and then a few other countries. But they're buying the hell out of gold, really, because those central banks alone, not counting the individual citizens of those countries who are also buying gold really aggressively, but just the central banks bought 1,000 tons of gold in each of the last 2 years, which is a huge offtake in a market where the world's mines only produce like 4,000 tons. So it's one, you know, it's 25% of the market being snarfed up by basically new buyers. And that's part of why gold has gone from $1,700 or $1,800 an ounce a couple of years ago up to 23-ish right now. You know, and that's a nice move, but it's nothing compared to what happens if these trends continue. Because it's not clear where the extra gold comes from if China and Russia and India keep on buying it. And then everybody else who normally buys gold keeps on buying too. So we could have a shortage of available metal, which causes some of the metal exchanges to stiff their futures contract customers. In other words, saying, well, yeah, you got a futures contract that's worth this much gold, but we're just going to give you cash instead, you know?
And well, they're allowed to do that.
They're allowed to do that, but it still constitutes a de facto default. And everybody will see it as a default. They'll say, oh, COMEX didn't have enough gold to pay off this month's contracts. Well, I want to be long the commodity where that's happening on a metals exchange, you know? I mean, people will just buy the hell out of it at that point, even more so than they are now. And I think silver is a bigger candidate for that, really, because it's such a tiny market and it's already in a fairly extreme deficit industrially. In other words, solar panels and microchips, et cetera, are using more silver in a given year than the world's mines are producing. So there's a deficit. And there at least one analyst is out there saying, okay, we can cover that deficit for now, but within 2 years, we won't be able to anymore. The above ground stocks of silver will have disappeared. And then the only thing that's left is pricing to bring the deficit back into balance. So the price of silver is going to have to go way up. And that's where you get the possibility for a default on an exchange. And if that happens with silver, it's just such a tiny market. You know, you could get like the Bitcoin level price move, where silver goes from $35 an ounce to $70 an ounce in a heartbeat, just because there's no more left. And the COMEX has defaulted, you know. And I think that's one of the really interesting prospects out there in precious metals. The kind of world where precious metals are doing that, where they have that kind of a trajectory, is a stressful world. But I think we kind of guaranteed a stressful world in any event. So we might as well make a lot of money from our silver longs while we're waiting for the world to end, you know. We die rich when the missiles start flying.
I guess that's what counts in the end, right?
Well, you know, well, we at least I have missed the other saying of live fast, die young, and leave a good looking corpse. But yeah, maybe we still have a chance at the guy who dies with the best toys.
Yeah,
that's right. Possible.
Hey, so what about all these retailers closing their doors here, even like CVS and Walgreens? And it seems like a lot of it is from retail theft, but a lot of it is also from lack of sales, right? Slowing sales.
Well, there's a couple of things going on right now at ground level in retail. One is, cities are so stupidly run. They basically legalize crime in California. Shoplifting is legal for all intents and purposes. So how would you like to be behind the counter at Walgreens in San Francisco or something like that when people just walk in, start shoving things off the shelves into a backpack, and then just look at you like, do something about that, you know? And you're not going to risk your life to protect. And then they would fire you.
And then if you do, you get fired, right?
Yeah. There's this great video out there, and I don't know where this took place, but there's a guy behind a counter somewhere, and somebody else comes in with a hoodie on. You can't see his face. He jumps over the counter, and the store clerk pulls out a knife.
Yeah, I
grabs
saw
that guy and starts stabbing him.
Very disturbing.
Disturbing, but a good signal to send to the world's shoplifters, though, right? Because I mean, that's the kind of thing that has to happen in some way, some level. I mean, the shoplifters eventually will be lucky if it's just knives, right? Because somebody's going to pull out a shotgun at some point. There's going to be a video of somebody just blowing a thief in half. And I'm not saying I want that to happen. I'm not saying the thief deserves to be blown in half. But you kind of lose control over what you get to say you deserve when you do stuff like that, you know? But that's going to be on YouTube. And that alone, that one video, will lower the incidence of shoplifting dramatically. So, I think with governments having abdicated their role in controlling crime, maybe the vigilante sector is going to have to do it for governments. I don't know. But I think that's an inevitability. And that knife video, the thing is, we don't know if that guy with the knife is now serving 100 years in prison or something like that, which kind of takes away
the fact. It was in New York.
Yeah, if it was in New York, they would lock that guy up in a heartbeat.
Yeah, the bodega owner guy that Trump went to visit there, that's exactly what happened. He killed the guy who tried to hold up the store and was threatening to kill him. He gets indicted by the same prosecutor who's persecuting, I should call him the persecutor, he's persecuting Trump. And then eventually there was such an uproar that they finally dismissed the case, but not after he spent like a week in Rikers Island. Disgusting.
Yeah, well, there's a saying now, the prosecution is the punishment. So it's not even that they intend to convict you. It's just that they can put you through a meat grinder in the criminal justice system where, yeah, they lock you up in Rikers Island and then they delay your trial for 6 months. And your lawyer is charging you hundreds of thousands of dollars when you don't have anything like that. And then they just let you go. But in the meantime, they ruined your life. So that's another way the system has been weaponized against people. And I really hope that we fix it instead of just whatever party's in power uses it for revenge against what happened to them when they were out of power. Because then we're just going to go back and forth with this kind of thing forever. So at some point, some president is going to have to step up and say, we're just going to use the criminal justice system for legitimate crimes.
For what? Intended.
Yeah, it's intended purpose. No political persecution, nothing like that. We're going to step back and our opponents can rest assured that unless they commit a blatant crime, the DOJ is not going to come after them. Somebody has to say that. And I don't know what the political calculation will be, whether that's seen as a good thing or a bad thing for the base. But somebody's got to say that to keep us from descending into civil war.
Well, you know, they would say that that's exactly what they're doing by prosecuting Trump and all these other so-called election deniers and January 6th people, all of that. And, you know, the case before the Supreme Court now, they basically used a financial criminal act that was passed to address the Enron fraud to put all the Jan Sixers into prison for 20 years. And now the Supreme Court looks like it's ready to revoke that. And, you know, like, really here.
These
outrageous.
These Trump persecutions are just falling apart. And they're not even having the desired effect, because they thought, well, we indicted 92 times. Nobody's going to vote for a guy who's indicted 92 times. But, you know, the black community is looking at this and going, yeah, that's how the criminal justice system treats us. And
yeah,
they're identifying with Trump. And I think they're impressed with his resilience, because they know how hard it is to stay normal when you've got the criminal justice system trying to put you away for life. That's not the kind of thing that that you can just forget about and go about your life. And Trump's doing it. He walks out of that courtroom and he's talking trash about the judge, and he's not backing down at all. I think black guys in particular appreciate that. They can identify with it, and they're impressed with how Trump's handling himself. So, you know, the Democrats are losing a big chunk of the black vote, which has got to be freaking them out right now.
Hey, all these things, you know, that now the judge is talking about holding him in contempt and putting him in jail, and the Secret Service is like, what are we supposed to do? Because we got to protect this guy 24/7. So we got to have three guys in a cell with him, and they're going to be armed. You can't go into jail ever with a gun, you know, anybody. And, you know, this is absurd, right?
Jerry, I didn't think of that. That's hilarious. Oh my God. You know, there's a screenplay in that too. Can you imagine, you know, the story of somebody going to, a president going to prison, and then what, from the point of view of the Secret Service agents. That's how you would have to write that screenplay. And it would be
What has he gotten us into now? This guy is a lunatic, but now he's just gone past the point, you know? And it's like the judge can theoretically do this. Now, look, New York has some, or once upon a time when I practiced law, there had some decent judges, and they weren't all political ideologues. But they're letting this judge go on here, judge who is out of control, clearly conflicted, biased, hates Trump's guts. That's okay. You know, I always said, any good lawyer, your job was to make the judge hate your adversary more than he hates your client. And so that's okay. But this judge is like off the rails. And the case is absurd. I mean, hey, could you ever imagine that your best witness would be somebody named Stormy Daniels?
Okay, so this is the Stormy Daniels case we're talking about, right? Which is the hush money case?
Yeah, the so-called hush money case.
Well,
it's like he's being indicted for getting extorted.
I saw a podcast the other day in which a lawyer was saying that the definition of election fraud is that you're doing something that could only be in the service of your campaign. That's right. The only way you can commit an election fraud.
Correct.
And a guy paying hush money to a woman that he had an affair with, and the guy is married, can be for a lot of different reasons. So there's no way that even fits the definition of the crime, right? Because he could have just been trying to save his marriage. Anyhow, that's the lamest of the the crimes. And the documents case just fell apart.
Yeah, that blown up. They altered evidence, right?
Yeah, the FBI, surprise, surprise, the FBI by altering evidence. Yeah, you know, I think you could make the case that the FBI just needs to be disbanded now, because they're, you know, they're involved in every kind of crime from the inception. You know, they're creating crimes and then tricking people into joining and then arresting those people. And at the very top of the food chain, they're framing presidents.
Yeah.
And you know, who who would you fire in the FBI?
Who would
make sure that you? Yeah, exactly.
Who wouldn't you fire? Like every manager there, and you look for like the young bucks who are the whistleblowers, and you put them in charge, right? Because this corruption is just beyond the pale, and that goes back to the Gretchen Whitmer case, where those guys supposedly wanted to kidnap her and kill her, and now the evidence is coming out that they were actually framed for this. They were, it was basically entrapment. And man, you just you can't make this stuff up.
That is the most hilarious story. I mean, it's not hilarious because it's the government framing citizens for a crime. But in the car, when they were going to do the crime, going to actually kidnap the governor, it was what, five feds and a couple of suckers that they roped into this. Oh, yeah. God. And we're a banana republic right now. And the fix is really not clear because it's institutional. It's from beginning to end, top to bottom in these organizations. And I'm liking Vivek Ramaswamy's plan of just on day one firing 70% of the bureaucracy and just do it alphabetically. You know, everybody with S, their name begins with an S, they're out. And the T's, they get to stay. Because how else do you decide? You can't trust anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was always my theory when you had like a snowstorm in Washington, D.C., because they totally can't maintain the roads there in a snowstorm. They don't know how to do it. And then they say only essential workers come to work. Everyone else stays home. So everyone that comes to work, you keep, and then you fire everyone who stayed home because they weren't essential, right?
I like that. That's way better than the alphabetical thing. Yeah. So, yeah, okay. I totally get that. But then, okay, yeah. But we're just talking government employees, right? Because otherwise you'd have like, we're keeping the massage parlor people on and the liquor store guys. They're essential.
Massage parlors open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I like that idea. You keep the guys, you keep the at ground level, street level police, and you keep the people who keep the roads clear.
Yeah.
And am I thinking of anybody?
Garbage collectors.
Garbage collectors, yeah.
Snow plows, obviously.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You kind of have the snow plows there. Right?
Yeah, Carrie, this is good. Yeah, well, this is sort of what the guy in Argentina did, where he fired half the government. Well, so now if we combine what the El Salvador guy did and the Argentina guy, because the El Salvador guy just went around and rounded up all the obvious criminals and put them in giant prisons.
Yeah,
then
right.
The Argentina guy, he just fired half the government. So we're seeing a lot of experiments being conducted out there. That if they work are going to be really good templates for what we
can
do.
Hey, so I have like a little secret to tell here. You're going to definitely want to be at Freedom Fest in Vegas, July 10th to the 13th, I believe it is, because I think Milei is going to speak there. All right. The president of Argentina. And all right, I'm probably not supposed to say this, but there is a good possibility that Trump is going to be there again, too. He was at the 2015 Freedom Fest, and like 2 days after or 2 weeks after he went down the escalator at Trump Tower. And he's speaking at the Libertarian Conference that's a couple weeks before. I think he might be at Freedom Fest. I don't have any official word, but I told Mark Skousen, you want this to be a great year for Freedom Fest, you got to get him back. So can you imagine Milei and Trump, and they meet, and then Trump becomes a born-again libertarian?
Could Trump name Milei as his vice president? Probably not, right? Because the guy's not.
Well, he could do it. There's one way he could do it. Like, because I think that he can just make anybody a citizen as president. So he could first pronounce that Milei is now an American citizen, and then he would be eligible to be vice president.
No, Oh, to be vice president, maybe. But you can't be president if you haven't been born here.
Well, work for Obama.
Yeah, if you could get the same forger who did Obama's birth certificate to do Meles.
I think we could do better.
Yeah. Well, you know, okay, so we're probably running out of time. So one quick vice president story. The Kristi Noem thing is just too hilarious not to mention because, you know, she writes a book in which she
found her dog
shooting a puppy. It wasn't even a dog yet. It was like 14 months old. So it was a puppy and it wasn't behaving. So she took it and she shot it. And then she thought, well, while I'm doing this, let me get that goat I don't like. And she brought a goat down and shot it too. And
battling scars.
Here's the funny part of the story, though, or the really what if part of the story. Because what if Trump named her as his vice presidential pick the day before that book came out? You know, because he's looking at people right now. Yeah. He could have named somebody, and she was, you know, top of the list on paper because she's gorgeous. She's conservative. She hunts. She runs cattle and stuff like that. She's from a state that is a must carry.
And must carry, right? Florida's a must carry state.
Those are the best states. Yeah,
I love it.
You're allowed to. You must carry. But can you imagine what the news would be like today if Trump named her his VP pick 3 days ago and then that book came out? You know what? I think Trump would brazen it out. He'd be like, well, yeah, dog doesn't behave. You put it down. That's it. You know,
he's not a real pet guy either, Trump. But, you know, like, what is it about those people in the northern Midwest? Like, she's more ruthless than Dick Cheney.
Well,
I think Dick Cheney would have done that.
I mean, that's one of the things about ranching and farming is that the animals have roles to play. And as soon as they're not contributing to the bottom line, in some way they're killed. They get shipped off for butchering, or you shoot them. That's how farming works. And but that's not something that you brag about in a book when you're trying to get the suburban wine moms to vote for you. You know,
Rover.
The dog's name was Cricket. She shot Cricket. Yeah.
can you imagine, you know, when what's his name, Mitt Romney was running for president, and in his book he mentioned that he tied the dog to the top of the car when they were traveling someplace. Remember all the grief he got about that?
Oh yeah, that's clueless white privilege, right? That's just a dumb thing to do. You know, he didn't intend to kill. There's actually a movie. I can't remember what the movie is, but they're going somewhere and they're in a hurry, and they get there and they see that the dog's leash is hanging out the window, but there's no dog attached to it anymore. So Mitt Romney, maybe that inspired that scene in the movie, what Mitt Romney did. But I don't know now. I don't know who Trump is going to pick, and the list is down to people now that I don't care that much about, because Tulsi Gabbard is apparently not on it, and Vivek Ramaswamy's not on it. So if I was Trump, I would just hire Ramaswamy and Tulsi Gabbard just for something. And, you know, just say, okay, they're in my cabinet somehow. I'm going to put them in charge of all kinds of cool stuff. And Kennedy too, you know, just announce that Kennedy is replacing Fauci. And Ramaswamy gets to decide who is fired in the government. And Tulsi Gabbard is the defense secretary or something like that.
And get ready for the mother of all measles outbreaks if Kennedy replaces Dr. Fauci. Hey, in my opinion, the only guy he should even think about picking, and I don't see him there, but I don't believe that those four finalists are really the finalists. That's not Trump's way. His way is to make you look there, and then you miss what's over there. To me, DeSantis makes the most sense, because that's a guy who can actually get stuff done. He's proven himself over and over in Florida. It's problems he hasn't solved here, like insurance and condo crisis that's going on now, but that guy generally knows how to run stuff. And, you know, I don't believe that their fight was ever real. You know, I think it's like Trump always needs an enemy. It's when he looks best, whether it's Rosie O'Donnell or Joe Scarborough, whoever it might be. He looks best when he's got an enemy. And I think it was all for show,
wow,
theater.
I'm going to take the other side of that one, Gary, because DeSantis never would have gotten elected if Trump hadn't stepped in and endorsed him twice, once in the primary, once in the election. And DeSantis was so disloyal. I mean, a normal person in that situation where your entire career is basically owed to this guy who helped you out, you don't immediately run against him. You know, I think DeSantis did something that Trump probably thinks is kind of unforgivable because it's so disloyal. But having said that, I think you're absolutely right. He would make a killer vice president because he can govern. He just can't campaign. Mm-hmm. So, you take him, you put him in charge, because basically what he does in Florida, as soon as there's a problem out there, DeSantis figures out a legislative fix for that problem brilliantly.
Right.
And so you just do that at a national scale. Trump goes, oh, I don't like what's going on over there. And then DeSantis comes back in 3 days and, okay, I got Congress to agree to this law that's going to just eliminate your problem. He could do that over and over again, you know, and I think he'd be great. But but Trump has to get over the anger that he no doubt feels about this kind of stab in the back that DeSantis did. But that would be the best. That would be the best possible choice for Trump to make.
Yeah, definitely. But in any event, doesn't matter what we think. In the meantime, there's a long time between now and November, but it sure looks like they're imploding. You know, the Biden regime, the Democrats seem to be imploding here.
It looks like they're not going to get, it's possible that they will not get a single conviction out of all these made up cases that they're trying against Trump. And meanwhile, the border is still open and World War III is right on the verge of happening. It's astounding. You know, if it wasn't for Roe versus Wade being overturned.
Yeah, they'd have.
No. I think there would be no choice or no chance. The Republicans will win 100% for sure. But abortion is now on implicitly on every state ballot.
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal. You know, you can't, it's hard to win the suburban vote.
Yeah.
If they don't like your abortion policy.
But the issues of the unbridled, open borders, the crime, and the wars, I think could eclipse that issue.
You would think that it would. And, you know, Trump's, I guess, he's handling it pretty wisely because he's saying, look, the states are going to figure this out, okay? Because half the Republicans apparently want to impose a national ban on abortion. Yeah. They want to make California and New York abortion free. Like, that would be an insane thing to do. But Trump is like, no, states are going to handle it. We got rid of Roe versus Wade, just like you Christian conservatives wanted. Now you have to back off.
Yeah.
While we let the states handle this, do not try for a national law on abortion. Yeah, it is. But you know, if the presidential candidate is saying it, that means the party is endorsing it. So that's okay. Trump can, he can impose his will on that issue.
Hey, just my feeling, if it wasn't for abortion, there'd be a lot more Trump children running around. Just my own personal view on things, John.
I could say a pretty funny thing, but I don't think it would play very well. So never mind. I'm not going to say it. Yeah.
All right.
After
well,
then, we'll, know else.
We'll end it on a note of censorship, self-censorship, best kind, because then the government doesn't have to step in because you already did their work for them. Hey, make sure you go over to John's Substack, rubino.substack.com, our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Show notes there. Click John's Substack and it'll take you right to it. And sign up for our free newsletter. John, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Bye, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.